What is up, you guys? A few headlines in recent weeks. There was a man who was gunned down in broad daylight, and his murder is being widely celebrated, especially among young people. There was a woman who had an OnlyFans page who slept with 100 men in one day and is promising before the end of January to repeat the stunt, only this time with 1,000 men, breaking the world record for sleeping with people in a single day. And Christians all around the world celebrated Christmas and just celebrated the Epiphany. And what do all these events have to do with each other? All that and more today on The Chris Stefanik Show. Hey guys, before we jump into the topic at hand, we are building out a new studio. If you look around, this is kind of needing a little TLC. When this is built up, we're going to be pumping content out from this space to inspire you and to give you stuff to share with other people who you know need inspiration that comes from God. Would you please help us make it all happen? Click on the link below this video, become a missionary of joy. Those are the people who fund this with a monthly small gift and make this whole ministry happen. You pour into us and we pour right back into you. Also, 2025, the Catholic Church proclaimed this a Jubilee year. It's a year of special grace with graces attached to incredible things like pilgrimages. And to lean into that celebration, I'm leading, like, I don't know, four different pilgrimages this year. We're going to Poland. We're going to see the canonization of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. We're going to Guadalupe. Me and Jimmy Wahlberg are leading a pilgrimage to Guadalupe. And in December next, God willing, we're going to lead another pilgrimage to the Holy Land. So click on the link below the video to learn about those pilgrimages. But I'm going to add this in as a Jubilee year gift if you join our newsletter. That's how you make sure that you don't miss any of the great stuff that we pump out to the world. But just for giving us your information and joining the newsletter, which, by the way, we never share your information with anyone ever, just between us and you. If you're in our newsletter list, we're going to do a random drawing that you and a friend, ground only, will get to win the trip with me and Jimmy Wahlberg to Our Lady of Guadalupe. We cover those expenses just for joining the newsletter. How cool is that? Okay, let's jump in. This is a big one. A lot of people today like to reduce the entirety of Christian civilization and the contribution of the Catholic Church to Western civilization to just a few different things. If you look in the index for a lot of, you know, public school history books and look up Catholic Church, you're going to find historic events attached to that, like, I don't know, the Crusades, the Inquisition, the sale of indulgences, the Galileo affair, colonialism. And of course, when they talk about those things, they simplify them to the worst possible elements. Not that everything about all those historic events is defensible, because it's not, and I'll be the first to say that. But we oversimplify it as just black and white, good, bad. Guys, there's a few, and maybe talking about that's for other episodes, there's a few more things that the Catholic Church had to do with Western civilization. I don't know, things like, that are overlooked in those history books. I don't know, like the starting of the hospital system? How about that? The founding of the university system, becoming the largest social service provider on earth to this day. Guys, if you flew a drone over ancient Rome, you'd find a Colosseum where people were celebrating as they were watching their neighbors get ripped apart by lions and kill each other in gladiatorial contests. You'd see big state buildings. You fast forward to the Middle Ages, which are often reclassified as the Dark Ages. You're going to find churches, and you're going to find institutions that educate people and serve the poor. Not so dark, those dark ages. We overlook all that and oversimplify the contribution of Christianity to Western civilization as something just wicked and bad. Now, why? Why this cultural shift? Why did Christians start all that good in the world? I'll tell you why. Because people who believed in Jesus believed in a God who is love, who found a human being worth laying down his life for. So they didn't just start new churches. They gave birth to a civilization founded on the idea that every human being, from the emperor to the poor homeless man that no one previously noticed, is of infinite value and worth. That kind of changes things, doesn't it? That kind of changes how we treat each other, how we organize society. Guys, think about this. Do you really think that if the Vandals and the Visigoths had taken over with their barbarian hordes and ruled Rome, and that Western civilization was a civilization founded on Visigoth ideals, Do you really think we'd have the hospital system and university system? I mean, if the Roman Empire stayed in charge. And by the way, the Vandals, by the way, that was an actual group of people. There's a language. It was a Vandal language. I bet they were nice neighbors to have. Do you think they'd have started a civilization that cared for the poor? If the Romans had stayed in charge, and this pagan Roman Empire that didn't have this idea that every life is of infinite worth to God, they had something called the pater familias, that a dad, that a father and husband had total authority over his family. If he didn't like his kid, at the age of two, he could just throw his kid out in the snow to die with no repercussions. His wife, his kids, were the same as the rest of his property. Do you really think that if they were in charge, we would have these things like, I don't know, the Me Too movement, where people stood up for their rights and said, you know, a man in authority can't abuse me. See, we don't see the connections. We're not connecting the dots here. Those types of movements, which we consider purely secular, come from a civilization founded on the idea that a human being has value, dignity, and worth. That the people around them in authority didn't give to them, but that it's inherent in our nature and needs to be respected. But where did that idea come from? God, maybe? Guys, do you really think that if the Romans were still in charge, the Roman pagan empire in 2024, that they'd have self-regulated and ended slavery? No! And look, Christians obviously haven't lived up to the ideals that Jesus founded our civilization on, but at least we have standards by which to judge Christians throughout history who failed at those ideals, and those standards did not come from a godless pagan world. The roots of Western civilization are profoundly Judeo-Christian. Now, with that in mind, let's look at some of the things that are happening in the headlines. Because I think what's happening, guys, is as we reject the roots of Western civilization, which are really, the roots are this belief in a God who loved us enough to lay down his life for us and thought we were worth laying down his life for. When you reject those roots, what happens over time is that the fruits that we all enjoy that grew from that tree start to go away. And we could see that happening in a culture that's celebrating violence. I'm sure you saw this in the headlines, that the CEO of UnitedHealthcare, Brian Thompson, was gunned down in broad daylight. I saw the clip of him being gunned down. It was ruthless, it was cold, it was heartless. But the fact that he was gunned down wasn't the scary part to me. See, because we grow up in a culture where we see violence happening on the news all the time. See, the really scary part is how that's become mainstream to celebrate that. Yeah, I'm not exaggerating. The Network Contagion Research Institute at Rutgers, they were tracking trends online to see how people reacted to this man being gunned down in broad daylight. And when the company posted about the tragic news of this man's public, you know, alleged, it's on tape, murder, there was 180,000 likes across different posts about it. 40,000 laugh emojis about this man's death. Guys, these are people who aren't just thinking, good, stick it to the man. They're being public about it. If that happened 15 years ago and you publicly posted, ha, 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 the man was murdered, you'd probably lose your job. Not today. We're a different world today. This was just recently released. Emerson College polling did a survey to find out the public response to this man's murder. 68% of all respondents, this is all ages, found it abhorrent. They said it was unacceptable that this man be publicly executed by someone who, there's no trial, there's nothing, just shoot him in the back. Then they broke apart the polling in more detail. Among younger people, Gen Z, 18 to 29-year-olds, 24% said they found it somewhat acceptable that the man was killed. 17% said it was completely acceptable. That's 41% of Gen Z who's saying it is acceptable to gun down a wealthy 50-year-old CEO with a wife and kids who's an executive at a healthcare company. Acceptable. I'm not going to judge that guy for you know, shooting him in the back. That's compared to 40% of the same age group who thought it was unacceptable. So there are more Gen Zers who are comfortable with the idea of shooting someone in broad daylight who you don't like than who are opposed to that. Okay, where do we begin? First, let me say this. All of you people, I love you, the Lord loves you, but I am saying all of you people who have relabeled Christian history and the contribution of Catholicism as nothing but evil, vile, and repressive, and let's get rid of this so that we could see life as it really is and be free of all the shackles from our past. Congratulations, you did it. You now have a world that is not founded on the idea that God is love, that life has an inherent purpose, that human beings have an inherent value that's so great that God found us worth dying for. You did it. You're freed of those shackles. And here's the logical consequence of it. Why is that a logical consequence? George Wald, he was an atheist, a famous atheist, he said, well, since there's no soul, there's no inherent purpose to life, we're a cosmic accident. He said 400 years ago, there was a collection of molecules named Shakespeare, which produced Hamlet. I'm going to say that again. 400 years ago, there was a collection of molecules named Shakespeare, which produced Hamlet. Ew. Guys, if we are no more than a cosmic space accident, self-aware space sludge, then the logical conclusion of that is that there is no right and wrong. There is no good and bad. I was hanging out with a friend the other day who's an agnostic. Great guy. And he said, you know, I'm good with your whole religion thing. As long as religion helps people be good. And I challenged him on something, and he agreed that there's an intellectual problem with this. I said, what is good if there's no God? How do you define that word? I mean, the reason I know gas is good for my car is that my car has a created purpose, and gas helps it fulfill the created purpose. If there's no creator and there's no created purpose to human beings, and we are no more than self-aware space sludge, then words like good and bad are completely, totally arbitrary. So I'd say if you're free of the shackles of religion, well, congrats. You have no basis by which to say, other than a utilitarian basis, that this works well for society or doesn't, right? There's no good or bad. You have no basis to say that it's bad to gun down a man in public. And I think that what young people are seeing and embracing is the logical conclusion of a godless worldview, where more of them are comfortable with this idea of killing someone publicly than those who are opposed to it. So that's one. And two, guys, the growing celebration of violence, it's a logical consequence of the deconstructionist worldview that's still steadily in Western civilization replacing the Christian worldview. And it's been gaining steam, and it has no end in sight. Let me dissect a little. I'll give you a brief history of what's been happening with how people have been throwing off the, quote, shackles of this Christian worldview, especially in the realm of education. There was a movement born in French universities called deconstructionism, where philosophers, existentialist philosophers, set out to deconstruct what they called meta-narratives. A meta-narrative is a presumed framework wherein you see reality and understand what you're looking at with this framework. So a great example of a meta-narrative is Christianity. They said, no, there's no metaphysics. There's no metaphysical reality whatsoever. Let's get rid of these meta-narratives. When you do that, then you could see reality as it actually is. Of course, one of the logical problems with that is that the idea that you should deconstruct meta-narratives is itself a meta-narrative. Anyway, that all seems kind of harmless, right? That's just something for universities. I mean, these kids come home with these crazy ideas. What harm does it do? What harm can an ideology possibly do? Ask that to the people who were killed in the killing fields by Pol Pot, where tens of thousands of people gave their lives because they were killed by communist ideology. There's actually a tree in that field where there's a plaque on it to the infants whose heads were smashed on the tree. Oh, they just had ideologies. These are the logical consequences of godless ideologies. So anyway, but it did seem kind of harmless when it was just about, let's think about reality. In the 80s and 90s, there's something called applied deconstructionism that exploded in college classrooms throughout Europe and the United States. In things called post-colonial theory, queer theory, critical race theory, intersectional feminism. And it married this deconstructionism with themes of social justice. So, They went beyond the French deconstructionists, and instead of labeling meta-narratives false or blocks to seeing reality as it is, they labeled meta-narratives oppressive and evil. Keep following me here, because the guy who gunned down the man in the street no doubt went to college and was trained in this way of thinking. Combine that with the idea that we have no soul, that we're just self-aware space sludge, and what you have is a powder keg for violence. Now, not everything that the social justice warriors tell you is wrong. Not everything is false. I actually kind of hate when people say, you know, if you claim that there's such a thing as racism, oh, you're just being woke and just kind of be dismissive of that. No, there actually is things like racism, there's injustice and all that stuff. The difference with the Christian response to the injustice is that when you believe that human beings are made in the image and likeness of God, and God found people worth dying for, and that we're supposed to fight for justice because of the inherent value of a human, that looks way different than the person who says, none of that's real. We're all self-aware space sludge. So then the only thing that actually exists in that worldview where there's inequality is the dynamic called power. Everything is reduced to a power struggle so that we make life as comfortable as we possibly can for the people who are here. The Christian worldview doesn't see the gears of the universe turning in terms of power, but of love. And when that's fueling how you address injustice, you look more like the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who looked profoundly different than people who take up the same types of causes 50 years after his death, who refused violence, who loved his enemies. These are the types of principles that the Christian finds true strength and power in. I gave a talk in the Philippines maybe 10 years ago, and it was incredible. I mean, what a beautiful culture. My Filipino friends who are watching, I love you guys. But we were in a very poor area, and I didn't know how to assess where I was. I'm like, is it safe here? And my friend who was taking me around to do the preaching there, she said, oh, yeah, yeah. She's like, you know, you might have pickpocketing here, but she said a phrase that really struck me. She said, we are not a murderous people. We are not a murderous people. And that phrase stuck with me because I thought, are Americans a murderous people? And sadly, guys, 2024, 2025, yeah, the answer is yes, we are. When there are more young people who are comfortable with killing you, if they don't like your politics, if they think you stand in the way of their fulfillment, if they think you are an oppressor just by virtue of the fact that you are CEO at a company that might do wrong or questionable things. Most of the people who are comfortable with this don't know the ins and outs of this guy's business decisions. They don't know. When you have more people in a generation comfortable with that, then the answer is yes, it's official. We are now a murderous people. No, we're not like the Mongols. We're not like the Vandals. We're not like the Aztecs who offered human sacrifice on their temples. We're way different. You know how we're different? Because today we have smartphones and lattes. But we are just like the pre-Christians in that we're just as murderous. Don't worry, I'm going to get to hope in a minute and inspiration. Stay with me. But guys, I want to go into the other part of the thing I opened with that we're seeing in the headlines. You have these ancient sins of being murderous that were rampant in the pre-Christian world and were commonplace. Then you have the other oldest sin, and it has to do with prostitution and sex, the oldest career, the oldest profession, they say. There was a young woman who had an OnlyFans account, slept with 100 men in one day. She has a goal of repeating that stunt with 1,000 men before the end of January. And I want to say this again, guys, not to be facetious, but take this for what it's worth. Congratulations. You did it. You who are architects of the sexual revolution, you did it. You liberated young people. They no longer have those crazy ideas that repressed them, that were handed on by their forefathers. You've set them free from the rules and regulations. Now, they have all the freedom of people who are driving down the freeway and don't have to pay attention to those silly yellow lines that kept their forefathers in place. They can drive wherever they want. They're free. You see where I'm going with this, guys? when you ignore the yellow lines, that's not freedom. That's total destruction. You see, all you've freed them from, all you've liberated them from, is the idea that humans are of infinite value and worth. You freed them from the ethical framework that arose from a Judeo-Christian worldview that they have actual purpose and dignity and value. As Scripture tells us, do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit? And you replaced that worldview with the, quote, liberating worldview that we are no more than self-aware molecules and the sexual ethics that arise from that view of the human person. And now, of course, now that they're free, they're much happier, right? Because now, without any social norms keeping them in place, keeping them in line, teaching them how they should and shouldn't act, well, now they're free to destroy their lives. There was a video clip after she slept with those 100 men that went viral, and she was asked, how do you feel? And she looked badly shaken. She didn't look like the person she usually presents to her OnlyFans page, this woman who's, quote, sexually liberated and just likes to sleep around and enjoys that because it's so awesome, right? No. She said with kind of a shaking voice and her eyes looking bloodshot, oh, this is not for weak girls. If I'm honest, it was hard. I don't know if I recommend it. I don't know if you're a different kind of girl. It was so sad to hear her say a different kind of girl. She's thinking a different kind of girl than me, which I'm sure she's thinking of those ideals of a woman she had as a little girl, a princess, someone who has dignity, someone who's treated right, someone who demands that she's treated right, someone whose parents uphold her dignity with her. By the way, her mom is involved in her business. Let that sink in for just a second. Her mother is probably financially benefiting from her business. Anyway, she said, I think if you're a different kind of girl, and she said it felt, she used this word that shows me she was clearly triggered. She said it felt intense. And then she said, excuse me, and she covered her face and started to cry and walked out of the room. Of course, interviews after that, she changed her tone entirely to things like, oh, I love my work. But she was clearly triggered. I'm intimately familiar with sexual abuse and its impact, and that woman has years of counseling ahead of her if she ever gets to that point. Later in an interview with Candace Owens, Candace was pressing her on, you know, why did you do that? Why did you let yourself be violated? Why is your mom letting you do that? What's in it for you? And she kept dancing around what was in it for her. And she was saying things like, oh, it gives me, you know, freedom. And Candace was saying, you mean financial freedom? Yeah, no, just like freedom to be who I want, do what I want. Like, I can just go get a coffee and not have to worry about anything. She's like, oh, you mean money? Well, no, it's just freedom and independence. You mean money. The money that gives you that, quote, freedom and independence that you don't have to work for like other people. See, here's the thing, guys. We always like to think the best of ourselves. I guarantee you, you go up to any mobster in the 1950s and say, you're killing people for money. And they'd say, no, I'm doing it for freedom, for the freedom of my family to be comfortable and safe. I'm doing it for my kids. You're killing people for money. It's for money. You see, when we stand before God, the parts of ourselves that we sacrificed for temporal things, we're not going to be able to make those excuses anymore. We're going to see ourselves as we are before Him and unable to hide. So even though she had tears in her eyes, and even though she's using the lines of freedom and the ability to go get a coffee without having to worry about anything or having to depend on another man to provide for her or anything like that at all, guys, I fear for her soul, because the road to hell, literal hell, is paved by such things. So as we look at how we're off the rails when it comes to violence, how that Gen Z is off the rails when it comes to sexual ethics, and you see the impact of that, that we no longer have a society that we can say, this is not a murderous society, like my friend in the Philippines could. We no longer have a society that people are expected to honor one another's bodies. Well, that's not a norm anymore, where she's celebrated and applauded for her, quote, liberation. What you see is the wrath of God. And I'm not talking about, like, Old Testament wrath, all right? Though that does happen, it can happen. But I think it's the more common wrath of God that you see, the kind that's described in Romans chapter 1:24. Therefore, God gave them over to the sinful desires of their hearts. Guys, God's wrath is not when he steps in and punishes you and wakes you up. God's wrath usually is when he lets you go. It's when he lets you do what you want. It's when he lets you experience the pain of the new world that you build apart from him. Maybe someday we'll wake up and come back around to the fact that we destroyed ourselves. He's giving us over to the logical consequence of a world based on the idea that we are no more than self-aware space sludge. 400 years ago, there was a collection of molecules named Shakespeare, which produced Hamlet. And we're much happier now. Dude, how's that working for you? How's that working for you? So let's come full circle, guys. Let's turn our eyes to Christmas. The other news that's been happening in the past few weeks, only this is not passing news, because a murderer will be forgotten, an OnlyFans girl will be forgotten, but this news is celebrated in every generation. It is ever-breaking, eternally good news. It's the news you remember at Christmas, the news you remember at Epiphany, which means manifestation. What was manifested? What was manifested as you look at the manger scene, as you see God in the form of a tender infant, what was manifested? He manifested not only who he is, he manifested who we are. And if I can home in on two things that he manifested about ourselves as we look at God in a manger, number one, he manifested that we are a mess. What do we do when the Father gives us the Son? What do we do with him? There's no room at the inn. We put him in a feeding trough. The three kings recognized who he really was, but Herod wanted to kill him, and we let him sleep on uncomfortable straw, and we eventually killed him. Why? Because all of us are as broken as a murderer or prostitute without his grace. That's what we do. He manifested our need for a Savior. But let me tell you what else he manifested. He manifested that he thought we were worth saving. He manifested that even though you break me and nail me to a cross, I've found you worth dying for in all your messiness, in all your brokenness. Guys, if you want to save the world, if you want to renew the world, let's look at the playbook of the early Christians. It doesn't start with a plan to, quote, save Western civilization. It starts with you and me drawing near to a manger and letting God love us, recognizing we need a Savior and receiving his love. It starts with you and me, inspired by that love, sharing him, not first and foremost a moral code. Not first and foremost a political plan, first and foremost sharing him with the world so that when you encounter a murderer or prostitute, you have the answer for them, that Jesus has something better for you. Repent and believe the gospel. The rest, like the rebuilding of a society in ruins and the redemption of Western civilization, the rest, as they say, is details. Thanks for watching, guys. I love you. Be sure to share and subscribe and become a missionary joy to keep our mission moving forward. See you next time.